Hello, and welcome to Building and Monetizing a Successful Partner Practice on Microsoft Azure. My name is Kathy Clement. I am in the Azure team at Microsoft, and I'm responsible for partner marketing, and I'll be your moderator today. Your speakers for this webinar are Darren Bibby, Vice President, Channels and Alliances Research at IDC, Seth Vardy, Senior Business Planner with Microsoft, and Alex Brown, Founder and CEO of 10th Magnitude. Everybody may know about the cloud, or you've heard about the cloud, obviously, and about Microsoft Azure, but what we've heard from our partners is that it's hard to engage and it's hard to get started on Azure and how to understand how to monetize. So we've got the experts on the phone. We've got Alex, who's going to give you some real-life examples of how he built his business and how he's been able to monetize Azure, and Darren's going to be able to give you the context of successful cloud partners and successful cloud businesses. And Seth will go through the different purchase options for Azure. As a partner, how can you purchase Azure and how can you make that work with your business model? This webinar will start with 30 minutes on cloud strategy and what makes a successful cloud partner. We'll then move into the purchase options for Azure partners with the specific examples. And then we'll end with about 10 minutes of Q&A. I'll now hand off to Darren.
Thanks, Kathy. This is Darren Bibby. I'm Vice President of Channels and Alliances Research at analyst and research firm IDC. Maybe a few of you on the phone have heard of us. We've worked with Microsoft a long time, and we're very, very thrilled to be working with them again and taking a look at this really interesting topic. Keeps us in business, frankly, at my group. How cloud is affecting business partners of Microsoft and across the industry. My group really spends about half our time talking to industry leaders, IT vendors out there like Microsoft and their competitors and partners, and then half our time talking to more of their business partners, the VARs, the MSPs, smaller SIs, and the GSIs and ISVs, everyone in between. Of late, in the last couple of years, we've worked on some different reports and different research on this concept of, you know, what is happening out there with cloud and how is it affecting partners? And really, are cloud partners more successful? What are some of those best practices? In 2013, you may remember a report we did, a colorful, good-looking report around successful cloud partners, and we followed that up this year. We spent some time with, we surveyed over 700 solution providers worldwide, and we were looking for some interesting things there, benchmarks, you know, what are our companies doing who've got more cloud than less, and then we're looking for interesting assertions that we could make to say that cloud partners, you know, make more profit or grow faster, et cetera, and I'm going to go through a few of those results with you. But what was fascinating to me is we got a chance to spend a lot of time. We often say we do in-depth interviews, and they're like an hour long. Well, we sent our analysts out, myself and my colleagues, to go and meet some of these folks. And we did some follow-up long interviews on the phone. But, folks like Alex Brown, who's on the phone from 10th Magnitude, we spent a lot of time with Alex going through his business and talking about, you know, what's working, what's not working, what have you tried. What are you doing? And Alex is on the phone. So, Alex, you want to just say hi and give us a bit of an elevator pitch on 10th Magnitude? And you and I are going to play a little, I don't know if it's Letterman and Paul Schaefer, Penn and Teller. Probably Penn and Teller is a bad one since that guy doesn't speak ever. So tell us a bit about 10th Magnitude, Alex.
So if I'm going to play the Paul Schaefer role, I'm going to have to lose a little bit of hair. So let me work on that.
There you go.
So I'm Alex Brown. I'm the CEO at 10th Magnitude. We are a born in the cloud partner based in Chicago, but doing business globally. Given the virtual nature of most of the delivery, we tackle. We are an Azure Circle partner, so we have been in the Azure business for 4 years. The entire company is devoted to Azure, so we are all in when it comes to cloud. Within that market space, and the Azure market space is quite broad, we provide a couple of core services to our clients. So we're a custom app shop. We provide custom application development services in Azure, which we not only build, but we run and maintain for our customers on a fully outsourced basis. So they don't have to buy anything, and they don't have to hire any people to help them execute their technology vision. I came to the second piece that we provide to larger corporate organizations. We provide essentially data center migration services. So how do you begin to reduce the your physical data center footprint as you begin to migrate workloads and operations into Azure? I got to starting the firm 4 years ago from my some insight I gained from my previous role. I formerly ran the global infrastructure consulting services business at a large enterprise hardware manufacturer. We had a big data center consulting group there that I supported. And after working with these huge data centers for a couple of years, I reached the conclusion that they are too big, they are too expensive, and they are too slow, and they're interfering with these businesses' ability to execute their strategies. And frankly, they'd become dinosaurs. So I got out of the hardware business, jumped into the cloud with both feet, and here we are 4 years later. Business is doing great. The market is really moving in a very interesting direction right now. So pleased to share some insights with you today.
Thanks, Alex, or Paul Schaefer, Alex. So one of the things I find really interesting is you're not a hybrid partner. You are kind of a born in the cloud partner, we might say, but you've got a hybrid history, you know, running the data centers and being on the that kind of side where you saw big companies buy a lot of hardware and try to deal with it themselves. So that's interesting. The other thing that's interesting and we'll get into is this idea that you run and maintain and outsource things for your clients and just make it a lot simpler for them. I thought that was really interesting, Alex.
Great.
So today, Alex is going to help me on the kind of higher level strategy discussion, talking about some of the things we found in this report. And then also you're going to spend some time focusing in on Azure, and maybe some of the partners want to know, well, how can I engage with my customers with Azure? How do I engage with Microsoft to do that? So you're going to run through a few scenarios. So we look forward to that. All right. So moving along. I want to point out at the bottom of your screen, too, if you want to go take a look at this ebook. It was going to be called a report, then it was really long, and then it became an ebook. That's how you work things when you when we have such good insight and it becomes a longer document. You know, we're really pleased. But go have a look at that. I think you go to MicrosoftPartner.com, you go to Solutions, you look under there under Cloud, and it's one of the top options you find on that page. I thought this was a better way than putting a huge URL there. You know, some of the topics we talk about, you get some of the great IDC data, and I'll share a little bit here. You get the sense of what we learned from the survey, that cloud partners are actually really continuing to outperform. Then you get a whole bunch of ideas and insights from the survey work and the in-depth interviews we did. And by the way, not all of this will apply to every company. In fact, you'll probably have to pick and choose to say, you know what, that insight is perfect for me, and that insight doesn't work because I'm going after a different market than the partners who gave IDC that insight. So, but I think that if you don't walk away with two or three great ideas out of the 30-plus ideas in there, you know, we haven't done our job. Or maybe you're Alex Brown and, you know, you helped to write this for us and you're already doing all this stuff. But we're quite pleased. It's just come out. It'll be talked about at WPC and on digital WPC. But definitely go take a look. But, you know, without further ado, let's look at some of the numbers in that or some of the content from the ebook. First of all, you know what? The customer has won. That's something I kind of like to say here. The customer has won. The cloud market's growing fast. As Alex said, a lot of companies don't want to buy their own hardware, set up their own data center. They want to consume in this new fashion. And guess what? That's going to change what happens for you guys in terms of recurring revenue and things like that. And the changeover is very difficult. But if you take a look at the market, it's inevitable. It's coming, right? Public IT cloud services spending reached $47 billion in 2013, and we're looking for it to reach about $107 billion in 2017. And what I like saying there, five times the growth of the IT industry as a whole. Right? So, you know, this is not a trend that you can kind of laugh at. This is not a fad. SaaS will remain the largest part of public IT cloud services, The other parts, of course, being platform as a service and infrastructure as a service. Those two will actually gain faster over the next few years. And then, of course, you know, as with anything, the emerging markets will grow a lot faster than developed markets, you know, partially because we've got a larger base already. We've seen some growth already in developed markets. But you can see some of these trends. You can see some of these trends across the world. You know, don't hide under a rock. I like to think that if you are not, if you're a 55 or 60-year-old business owner, and you don't, you've gone through two or three big changes in your lifetime, your career, your business, maybe you don't have the appetite for another big one. But if you're not ready to retire in the next couple of years, you probably have to do something with cloud. It's, you know, I wouldn't want to be on the back end of this trend. It's like any consumer business you go to, you want to go with a leader. So you're going to have to ask yourself, you know, where do I need to be in 2 or 3 or 5 years, and then what technologies and services do I need to offer? And I think that kind of forward-looking thinking is what you need. Okay, so we found that cloud partners continue to outperform. Now, the performance is related to cloud, the second bullet there, but I really want to make this point. We believe that top-performing solution providers have been taking on cloud in their businesses earlier and adopting it faster than their peers. The theory here goes that basically successful partners over the last 10 or 15 years, they've seen the trends early. Maybe it was around virtualization. Maybe they jumped on SharePoint first. Maybe they saw a client server first years ago. But these guys knew that cloud was coming. It was an inevitable trend. It was a trend where the customer wins, they want it, and they knew they had to jump on it. So they brought all of their great KPIs to our study. We've also found that cloud can definitely help on some of those KPIs, but you got to understand this is a balance. You can't just pick up Azure and expect to be at the, you know, highest profitability percentile or quartile. You can't just sell some Office 365 and expect to get this. This is from a survey of 700 people. And by the way, we've now done this 3 times, 3 different surveys, and we've got similar results. The cloud partners, those guys with over 50% of their revenue coming from cloud-related services, they are outperforming. Take a look at this chart here. Gross profit, and we basically got these quartiles. It's almost, you know, dividing up the survey responses into quartiles. Less than 10% cloud, 10 to 20% cloud, 20 to 50%, 50% plus, okay? And then you have a look at gross profit across, okay? It's a good measuring stick. You know, 42% average for the top quartile. Those are what we call the cloud partners. And then you look at across, it's down to 24%. It's really nice, smooth line. We love to see that as analysts. It's easier to work with. Revenue growth, again, maybe, you know, actually that third quartile is growing a little bit faster, but you see a big difference between the top two quartiles and the bottom, really seeing some interesting trends. If I move forward a slide and just add at the bottom, the text at the top is the same. Recurring revenue as a percentage of your overall business, you know, and this makes sense, they kind of go together, but those partners with more cloud revenue also had more recurring revenue percentage. I'll give you one more though, and this may change over time as companies build up books of business, but the cloud partners, these better performing partners, were able to get more of their customers they work with from new sources than existing. And basically the question there is, of your 100% of customers you worked with in the last year, how many were new out of 100%, and how many had you worked with before? So these cloud guys are able to get, you know, 43% of their customer bases from new sources last year. Very, very impressive compared to the rest, who may be, you know, milking their relationships. Of course, this has always got to be something where you got a nice mix, but you've got to be able to go and find new clients. Now, here's a big one, and I'm going to ask Alex for some of his thoughts on this. Planning for your cloud business. You know, if you look at this chart, a traditional project services model may look something like this on the left of the chart. You're moving up 5 or 10% in revenue each year. You're billing more from your existing customers. You're adding some new ones. And actually, this, you know, it's never a straight line, is it? There's peaks and valleys when you're doing project-based services and transaction-oriented services, maybe reselling something. And every dollar you get in revenue this year, you've got to go and sell that again next year. So it's a hard business. On the right side, if you're running some kind of cloud or managed services model, you've got this idea, this concept of recurring revenue. You know, you can see those different kind of streams of revenue over time. You've got, by year five, you've got customers you've got in year one, year two, year three, year four, year five. You know, year one, that looks kind of tough in this model, and it is. And there is a trough, and this is the number one thing that's preventing partners and other companies from moving to the cloud and a recurring revenue model, I think. But if you've got the long-term view, if you are that forward-looking and forward-thinking partner, this can be a great model. So this is what I think a lot of people are struggling with. So Alex, what's interesting to me is that if you're competing against some of these guys who've still got that, you know, project services traditional model, you're not worried about that revenue, are you? So you've got this recurring model. You know, are you looking a few years out, and what do you think when you come up against these traditional guys?
Sure. So we come up against the traditional guys often, and I'm always happy to compete, because typically we're going to beat them because our cost structure is different. So one of the implications of the model you have here, which is 100% correct from my perspective, is since you're not carrying this legacy project staff with a lot of the implicit project staff overhead, the cloud organizations tend to have a leaner and meaner cost structure, and the project teams, because there is a project component to what we do, tend to be leaner and meaner. It's a lower cost of delivery. Because essentially the game we're playing is the long game, where we are trying to build up over time these recurring revenue pieces. So back to one of the data points, Darren, on one of your previous slides that I thought is particularly interesting. I think one of the reasons the cloud players are acquiring clients at a more rapid rate is they have to. Right? We can't milk an existing client base, A, because we probably don't have one, but B, because the key to profitability here is to build up these layers of revenue that come out of multiple clients. So we need to acquire them and build that revenue layer model that you've got represented here. And what that means is, you know, from a project costing perspective to acquire those clients, we're running pretty lean, and we're probably cost advantaged, frankly.
Yeah, and I think we'll talk about it a little bit later too, if we have time, Alex, but the whole idea on the managed services side or the cloud side, if you're offering these services for a set amount per month, there's a lot of things you can do to reduce that cost of goods sale. When I talked to the partners in the ebook, some are running these what they call remote delivery centers. So your average cost for your engineer is much less than when you have to have almost a premium engineer that you're willing to send out and put in front of your customers, right? That person who's got to be out on site dealing with the customer, dealing with the executives, you got to pay them a bit more. They've got to have that business acumen. All of a sudden, the more you can bring that into a remote delivery center, you could spread that architect out across a lot of deals. You can bring in more junior people, and we're seeing a lot of those efficiencies. Hey, you can automate, right? There's a lot of those efficiencies and ways to get higher profitability in this model if you're patient. So let's take a look at sales. I mean, obviously, this is a big one. You know, cloud really does change the selling relationship in a huge way. If we take a look at the left side of kind of the sales model, this is the old world. You had an inventory of stuff, of billable services, of people, of software, of hardware. You had a stock. You had an inventory. And your main goal as a salesperson was to get to the sale, right? And then you almost weren't worried about anything past that. You knew you were almost selling them some parts of a lemon, in the sense that, oh, they're going to have a patch for that in a few months, so look out for that. But good luck with everything. When you move to the cloud, when you move to anything with that recurring relationship, you're really worried about the usage. You're really concerned that your customers are using the software, they are using the solution. Otherwise, the switching costs these days, it's not that hard to move from, you know, Microsoft CRM to Salesforce or vice versa. So you have to be very careful about that. So we're seeing a lot of great stories around this. I think the number one insight I've heard over the years, and I've literally been looking at cloud or its predecessors and its impact on partners since 2006, and I'd say one of the things partners are most excited about is that cloud can often be a great door opener. You know, that thin edge of the wedge, the land and expand type strategy, where you get in, you sell, and then you know, one partner told me, well, once I sell, I've got a hall pass. I've got a reason to get back in with that customer. I've got a reason then to go on and upsell them other cloud things, but also other on-premise deals, other services, things like that. Alex, is that something you've seen, that kind of land and expand model? Cloud maybe helps you get in the door a little bit easier with some of these offerings, and then, you know, you really can take it from there?
Yeah, I have definitely seen that dynamic play out, and to a certain extent, it's driven by the adoption pattern for cloud that we've seen in a lot of the larger accounts, where they will want to typically dip their toes in the water with a modest kind of deployment of some,
right,
you know, non-mission-critical workload. And then as they get more comfortable, and as we continue to talk to them and talk to them about the opportunities, the opportunities tend to kind of snowball, and they will take more and more workloads and begin to move those to the cloud. So the footprint that we're operating with them on expands significantly. But again, it's a lengthy process. This is not a 1 or a 2 or a 3 month process. This is a long-term relationship. I've seen it in a number of our accounts play out over 12 or 18 months.
It's interesting,
so again,
on the sales cycle. We found too is that, you know, I think the end goal or the end result in cloud is that it will be a shorter sale than the traditional or the comparative feature set in on-premise. But a lot of people have never heard of a cloud services agreement. A lot of lawyers are now getting involved. There's more stakeholders. You're selling to line of business as well as selling to IT. There's more stakeholders. So some of this stuff can actually take a long time for maybe a smaller payoff in the short run. So, yeah, we've also seen that. Alex, you know, one of the theories I've got on this, and you mentioned it too in one of your comments, is that, you know, there's almost a bit of a land grab going on to get some of these clients, because if the incumbent gets the future business, you've got to get in there with these guys. You've got to get a lot of these deals. You've got to get those recurring revenue streams before someone else does. And that's, again, why I think partners have to get in on this sooner rather than being on the back half of this this trend. Any thoughts? Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it completely makes sense. And I think, frankly, the way it's playing out for the partners and what we need to do to acquire customers is very similar to the land grab that's going on within the kind of public cloud space in general.
Yeah.
Right, where that's absolutely where the large vendors are in that marketplace. I think it's reflected in the behavior of the partners and in the need for us to move quickly.
Absolutely. Now, this one may or may not apply to you, Alex, so I'll see if you want to jump in later. I think one of the most interesting things, and being an analyst, I love these contentious, debated issues. So will companies opt for a separate cloud group? So you basically have two sales teams, one that sells the traditional stuff and one that sells the cloud stuff, or will they go for an integrated sales team, an integrated group? And basically, I think the argument really comes down to a couple of basic things. If you have two teams, you can help to eliminate the conflict that would arise if you had one person trying to sell the same feature, the same functionality in two different methods, right? If I'm a sales rep, you know, even for a big company or a smaller partner, and I could sell them that same functionality in a cloud or managed services world, or I could sell them that functionality, you know, on-premise. Let me see here. I want to put a pool in this year. I need more money up front. I need a bigger deal. I need, you know, that license revenue up front. I need that transaction, that project services. I'm going to sell them the on-premise piece. Whereas maybe there's not enough money to give to that salesperson on the cloud or recurring stuff right away up front. You know, if I'm thinking long-term, then, you know, the cloud's a great strategy. But a lot of salespeople, let's not, you know, they've helped a lot of us on the phone. So that's the conflict that can happen when you have one sales team. So that's why a lot of companies tend to go for two. Now, the great thing, and you can kind of work this out, it's the yin and yang, but if you have one sales team, you can offer choice, right? First of all, work out with your customer. What is it that you want to do? What's the feature or functionality? What's the workload? And then do you want it in public cloud? Do you want it in kind of public hosted or private hosted? Or do you want it on-premise because you, for some reason, want to do it on-site? And that's this whole thing, I think, is going to be a really interesting one. Let me give you a bit of evidence from our survey. Basically, I'm looking on the left here at the cloud partners. That's the group of partners who have 50% or more cloud, or the top quartile of cloud-oriented partners, and then the rest. Now, what you see in this chart, and you see a couple of things highlighted. You see 59% highlighted on the left and 33% on the right chart. There's only three things. It's basically how have you organized your company for cloud. Yellow is a totally separate company, and that's a very common thing that people do is they almost spin off, almost like what you did in a sense, Alex, but you came from different worlds. But a lot of companies are saying, I need the focus. I need people not to have that conflict. I'm going to spin off a totally new company. Almost one in five have been doing that. The other one is to do a separate division. So it's interesting there that the other partners who aren't doing as much cloud find that they do have to do a separate division, and that's basically the two sales teams. Over on the cloud partner side, you see there that more of them, almost 60%, have fully integrated cloud. Well, it's because they're leading with cloud, or cloud's the bulk of their business, but I think that just gives people a bit of an idea of what we've been seeing. Any thoughts on that, Alex? Or I know we talked before, maybe this doesn't apply as much to you, the size of your company, or what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so we to a certain extent have not had to wrestle with this problem because since all we do is cloud, you know, by definition, you know, we have a sales force that's solely focused on that. So we've avoided the challenge. My sense and from observing some behaviors I've seen from some competitors is I think it is very, very difficult to execute the middle ground strategy of having one sales team responsible for both on-prem and cloud solutions. Salespeople are coin-operated. They will take the path of least resistance. And as soon as there is any hurdle thrown up to cloud adoption, you know, you're right back to square one, and I think you're going to find that you're only going to make progress in terms of driving cloud adoption very, very slowly and frankly, too slowly with a combined sales force.
Yeah, agreed. I think this depends on every company, what they feel they need to do, what they feel the maturity of their company is, their salespeople. I mean, through this exercise, we found companies who had seven salespeople, and they let them all go. They knew they had to start fresh. They needed a different kind of outlook for their sales folks. So certainly sales is one of the biggest ones. How about this topic of sales comp? I love this one because it's contentious. It's a good one. We asked all the partners, what is your sales compensation strategy for cloud? And honestly, there's truly a mix of comp strategies. I've talked to many partners who said, we've never quite figured this out yet. We're still toying with it. The one trend that does seem to come out, and it's the bigger blue bar on top, is the trend, if the company can afford it, is to try to pay more to the rep up front. It's almost like the salesperson wins in the short term, you know, and it partially solves the salesperson's dilemma because you're trying to give them as much money up front as possible. And then the business is winning in the long term. You know, they're getting the year two, year three, year four, year five, and on. They're getting the bulk of that without paying the rep as much. Though I have heard some companies are you know, they do think they've got very intelligent salespeople who will understand the value of building a book of business. So it's you know, this one is definitely a tricky one. Another trend I'd say is that most companies have separated out the hunters from the farmers, the people who go out and find new business. Those are your highest paid hired guns, and separating out those from the people who focus on renewals. But you know what? There's so many pieces to this, whether you're doing larger deals, enterprise, or you're doing SMB and you've got telesales doing it. There's so many pieces to this. So hopefully the ebook will give some ideas and some options on this. We're almost at time. I'm having a ton of fun asking you questions, but I know I'm almost at time, so I'm going to just speed up and go through maybe a few stories on this, and I think we maybe already talked about some of these, Alex, but you know, this whole land and expand idea, we talked about that. Cloud is the ultimate door opener for many, many reasons. People are curious about it. It's try and buy. It's a little cheaper to get in at. You can sell it to the line of business. Why don't we jump to point three, actually, that line of business sale. I mean, we are absolutely hearing about this trend that the new buyer is the line of business. At IDC, we've said that by 2016, 80% of IT investments will involve line of business as an influencer, and about half of those will have the line of business as the chief influencer, the decision maker. Are you also seeing this, Alex, in your business? Are you starting to deal with line of business more than you've seen in the past?
Yeah, so on the application side of our business, we sell quite heavily to line of business. That's actually the predominant client. It's typically not IT. And what they are looking for, and the reason we spend so much time there, is they are really looking for speed of execution, speed to get in market, speed to convert to revenue. That they are not fundamentally looking for a lot of the traditional IT messages, you know, around cost reduction and TCO and things of that nature. Is not at all the profile that we engage with.
They want to get stuff done.
They need to get stuff done. They need to drive revenue. They need to drive top line, and they need to create new product and new markets. And I think increasingly they are finding that by engaging with the cloud, they can accomplish that very quickly without having to without finding that they're bogged down or slowed down by a lot of the traditional IT procurement processes.
Absolutely. Let's maybe take I don't know if we should take one more. There's so many great ideas here, but we're basically out of time. You know, you may not have to change everything, followed by reduce the cost of sale. What I'm trying to say there is, if there are businesses who have you know, SIs who have survived and thrived on the idea of professional services days, right? So, you know, one of the quotes in the ebook you'll see is that there's an SI out of the UK, and he said it's not the resale of Office 365 for him, it's the professional services days that he can add on. And so you may not have to change everything in your business depending on who you go after and depending what you're going for. Other partners we talked to were making a lot of money from selling Office 365 Azure solutions, keeping these guys as, you know, long-term customers, but doing it on volume, doing small and medium, and you know, just a lot of volume. They have to reduce their cost of sales, so they can't have lengthy one-to-one, you know, in-field discussions. They got to go to telesales. You know, some partners, one of them came up with a great one-to-many selling model. They were bringing several prospects through their sales process at the same time, and then of course marketing really has to speed things up. In terms of, you know, handing over, you know, 40% leads to sales, not 20%. The more you can get marketing to do in this world, the more profitable you'll be. So lots and lots of other ideas. You know, the other one we were going to talk about is the managed services strategy. They're just, this is one of the key areas for people to find more efficiencies, as I said before, remote delivery centers, spreading out the technical architects, you know, backfilling with more junior, less expensive architects, or sorry, you know, engineers or service people, as you will. There's a lot of opportunity there. This idea, though, and you know, we've talked about it quickly, but Alex, this idea of signing up retainer agreements, ongoing agreements, support hours, buckets of hours, this is something you're absolutely doing, right? As you're coming up with a way. I probably don't have time to tell my haircuts as a service story in full, but it's the idea of taking something that used to be transactional or one time and coming up with it over time. And if you're in certain cities, you can buy a subscription to haircuts. Go as much as you want. Are you doing this kind of thing?
Yeah, we are.
And haircuts?
Exactly. It's all about Paul Schaefer. So right. We are doing this. In particular, this makes a lot of sense when you're talking to a line of business buyer. Because right. they have a need to kind of consistently get things done, and we need to make it easy for them.
Yeah.
And so that this is a way to bundle things up, make it very easy for them to engage, reduce the friction in that transaction, and just allow them, to think about the business and what they need to do and not think about IT. So typically, in the case of, you know, an application that we may have delivered for them, we will bundle for them, you know, on a monthly basis, you know, a set of hours that they can use for any number of different things, support, enhancement, and maintenance.
And we heard that a lot from the other partners too, so great strategy. Well, listen, I've taken more than my share of time, but I think we were having a lot of fun, so I hope I'm excused. If you've got questions on some of the ebook or these topics, you know, put them into the system and we'll take a look. I'm going to pass things over to Seth, and Alex, you're going to stick around and also play Paul Schaefer for him as he talks through some of the Azure purchase options. Thanks, guys. Go ahead, Seth.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. So I wanted to spend a few minutes talking about just, you know, some of the ways that you can actually buy Azure services. And so Alex is definitely going to walk us through some of these scenarios, but I just wanted to kind of set the stage a little bit of, you know, what are your options here? Because there really are two ways you can go about purchasing Azure services. Now, as always, you can just go to our website. We have a couple of different options on the website for buying Azure. You can put a credit card down or sign up for invoicing and just pay as you go. So at the end of every month, we're going to send you a bill for what you actually consumed. We also have the option to make a commitment to a monthly plan or an annual plan. It starts as low as $500 a month, and then we do 20% discount across all the Azure services. So this is a great way to get discounts across the board, regardless of what workload you're running, by just making a relatively small commitment through our website. So it's a pretty easy way to get going with discounts just from the web. But if you or anyone happens to have an existing volume licensing relationship with Microsoft and have access to our enterprise agreement offerings, those structures focus on allowing customers to make an upfront purchase of dollars that go into an account for spend on any Azure service. So if you're buying, say, copies of Office or Windows and you want some Azure capacity, you can put dollars in upfront into an account that gets spread as you consume Azure services. Or you can go to a quarterly billing process where whatever you've actually used under your enterprise agreement, we'll bill you for that usage at enterprise rates on a quarterly basis. So those are really the two options in which we're actually selling Azure to our customers and our partners. And to try and bring that to life, well, what does this really mean? I may have one contract through the website, or I may have an enterprise agreement. What can I actually do? We're going to walk through some specific scenarios that Alex has actually seen and been a part of. Now, we have use rights that are common across these programs. So if you buy through our website or you buy through our enterprise agreement, you can still do the same things with Azure services. You can use them for yourselves. You can use them in support of, you know, managing services or applications for your customers. So you're not going to be, you know, limited by buying through one program or another. But there really are a lot of different scenarios, and we've highlighted three here, you know, building and managing applications for your customers, or perhaps helping a customer manage their own environment. They have their own contract directly with Microsoft, and you just want to help them manage those services as opposed to having to operate the contract as well. Or you may be just supporting migrations of existing environments into the clouds. So I'm going to hand it over to Alex. He actually has been through these scenarios and is really going to help bring this to life and help you get a feel for what are the options if you happen to have an existing relationship with us and are wondering how you expand your use of Azure, or if you're thinking of jumping in and wondering what path you may go down and then what lights up after that. So with that, I'll hand it over to you, Alex.
Terrific. Thanks, Seth. So what I want to do is I want to talk through each of the three scenarios that Seth outlined and actually get a little more granular. You know, all of us on the call, you know, we've all got revenue targets we've got to hit, we've got payroll we've got to make, and so, you know, how are we really going to monetize this stuff? Where are the dollars really flowing from each of these three scenarios? So let me walk you through a few scenarios that we've come up against, and these are, you know, the names have been changed to protect the innocent, but the scenarios have all played out in one form or another in our business. So let me first talk about the scenario where your organization owns your own EA. You have an EA in place with Microsoft, and you've got access to Azure at a discount underneath that EA. So in this scenario, I may be confronted with a customer who's got a small line of business app they want us to build. we're dealing perhaps with a VP of sales, perhaps a CMO, and they don't want to engage IT. They need 10th magnitude to not only build it, but they need us to run it and keep it running and maintained for them. So once they get it in market, everything moves smoothly. So essentially what we do in this case is terrific. Happy to build you that app. So I'm going to charge you up front. You can see in this little diagram down there, I'm going to have one developer. This is a small app, so I'm going to have one developer spend a month building this application. That's the blue bar, so I'm earning dollars on project-based fees there. And then I've got the app running, right? And you'll see in months 2, 3, 4, and 5, and frankly out to, until they turn this thing off, which hopefully is never, I have ongoing revenue coming in from two different sources, right? I am billing them every month for the platform, right, for the Azure that they are using to run this application. And then I am billing them on a monthly basis a support charge to maintain and monitor and secure this application. So I've got one big, kind of slug of consulting revenue coming in up front, month one, to build this thing, and then I've got two small slivers of revenue that are going to go on in perpetuity once this thing is completed and we're operating it for them. Okay, so that's one scenario on how we can monetize this. A second scenario that I want to walk through is one where the customer decides to pay as they go, right? So they're gonna purchase Azure themselves, how are we gonna make money in this situation? So here's a scenario where the customer wants to migrate their dev test environment into Azure. I find a lot of customers like to start there because it seems safe. So terrific, we'll help you get that environment moved. Not a big project, probably take us less than a month. In most cases, they've put Azure on their credit card, so they're paying for it. I am not making any money on it from that perspective. However, we are providing for their dev test team ongoing operation support of this environment so that the developers can focus on development instead of on operating this environment. So again, I've got one upfront slug of revenue coming in from project-based deployment services to get dev test migrated in month one. That's the orange bar. And then following that in months 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 out to infinity, we are providing operations support. And so we have a small piece of revenue coming in. So if you think back to the first slide and you add the recurring revenue from the first slide to the recurring revenue that I have coming in from the second scenario, all of a sudden you can see we're starting to build up a nice portfolio of recurring revenue. So let's go to the third scenario. This is one where we're dealing perhaps with a larger organization, and we are going to influence them to purchase Azure on their own EA. They may be purchasing $50,000, $100,000 worth of Azure at a shot. Typically, these are more IT-focused scenarios. So in this case, we are going to help this customer migrate and run their data center in Azure, or as much of their data center as we can run in Azure. So revenue is going to come in from a few places. We're going to have a relatively, in this case, lengthy migration engagement. So there's a professional services revenue coming in over months. This is the blue line. We're going to have a number of engineers deployed in their data center. We're going to assess their workloads. We're going to determine what remediation has to take place to migrate them into the cloud, and we're going to move them. As we're doing that, we're sizing this, the EA that they're going to need, how much compute, how much storage, how much bandwidth are they going to need to run all of these workloads in Azure. They're going to purchase an EA, and we are going to provide them with ongoing server maintenance for each of the workloads that they move into the cloud. We are going to, on a monthly basis, essentially bill them a support charge to keep that monitored, healthy, maintained securely in Azure. Again, for any given server, is that a lot of money? No, but over the course of an entire data center, that can add up. And you can see that as we migrate workloads, that red bar, which is our ongoing server maintenance recurring revenue, is growing as we're bringing more and more of the assets over into the cloud from their on-prem data center. So with that, Seth, let me turn it back over to you. Hopefully, was able to address some more of the detailed questions on where does the money really come from here.
Okay, I think this is. Go ahead, Seth.
No, it's fine, Kathy. I mean, I know we have a number of questions that have been coming in through the queue, so I don't know if we'll tee those up.
We do have a number of questions that have come through the queue, and there's a general theme, and many of the questions are about, you know, how do I resell Azure? And I'm going to answer that question, and I'll let Seth add any color commentary to it. But so currently, Azure, the options that you have for purchasing Azure and the use rights around it do require some kind of value add on top of it. So we don't have a resale program to date. So the different options that that Alex just went through, where you can buy it yourself on an enterprise agreement, which is our volume licensing agreement, is one of the options. You can do that, and then you can actually aggregate your customers' usage underneath that and then take advantage of those volume discounts on your own. You can also do that via our pay-as-you-go off the website program. You could also, and many of our ISVs actually do this, where they will purchase a pay-as-you-go agreement, whether it be a monthly pay-as-you-go or a commitment, a 6- or 12-month commitment directly off of our website, and then they will aggregate those costs, and they'll get the discounts from that. And then the other option is that you actually influence your customer to either purchase a volume licensing agreement, or if they may already have a volume licensing agreement with Microsoft, which is the case with many enterprise customers. And what you would do in that case is you would be influencing the sale of Azure on that enterprise agreement. Currently, we also had some questions around incentives in conjunction with many of the questions around resale. Currently, we do offer incentives to a very small number of partners based on their influence sale to customers. However, we're going to be making some enhancements to the incentives program that I'm not at liberty to disclose right now. However, we will be announcing some enhancements at WPC. So definitely keep your ears open for that. And now the next set of questions that I want to go to, I actually want to hand off a couple of questions to Alex here, because I think he can answer them really well. And they're around, you know, support for the customer. One of them was, you know, give us a really good example of operational support that you're doing on a recurring basis. And the second one is, because Microsoft provides direct support for Azure, do you get cut out, Alex, as the partner? And how do you make yourself relevant there?
Sure. So let me tackle the first one. So in terms of operational support and what are we providing there? So the example I used here is one around dev test. And so operationally, what we're doing there for a client like that is we are essentially providing a resource to their development team to help build the new development stack, build and deploy and configure the new development stacks that they need to be rolling out there. So we've essentially offloaded that from the dev team, and we have pushed that onto a resource in our call center who knows this customer well, understands the typical stacks and tools that they're working with, and is able to very quickly get those resources deployed for the developers, so the developers don't have to, again, spend time configuring or provisioning essentially anything. And that's an arrangement that's worked out very well for them and allowed that development team to gain quite a lot of velocity as a result. Okay. So that's one example, hopefully a helpful one. Kathy, refresh my memory again. The second part of the question.
The second part of the question is Microsoft, offer support directly to
right.
Azure customers. So does that mean if a partner migrates their clients, they run the risk of losing them?
How
do you make yourself relevant?
Yeah, so we have not run into this problem. But I think the reality is there could be some risk there, and it probably depends on that type of services that you're providing to your customers. So we have not had an issue here, primarily because when we engage with a client, typically we have a we're doing it because we have a very, very deep understanding of a very specific application case that they are tackling. And so the type of support that they're going to get from Microsoft kind of generically around the platform is nice and certainly important, but in this case, not what the client is really looking for, where they are really looking for substantial domain expertise that we have and that we maintain. So we've actually been able to work quite collaboratively with the Microsoft support offerings, and it's not posed a problem for us. I think if you're perhaps providing a very kind of general purpose, plain vanilla support offering, could be a bigger issue. I can definitely see that.
Great, thanks, Alex. Another question for you, Alex. what works best for you? Is it best to market Azure with you as an Azure expert, or downplay Azure and market services? Market Microsoft
yeah.
up front.
So this is a great question, and I've had some knockdown, drag out conversations on this one. So I think the answer is it depends on who you are selling to. So we sell very heavily to line of business. I typically don't actually mention the word Azure at all in the sales cycle, and we don't market ourselves as Azure to those people at all. So I'm a firm believer. I subscribe to the Fight Club rule of selling around this type of solution, which is, what's the first rule of Fight Club? Don't talk about Fight Club. So the first rule of Azure is don't talk about Azure. The line of business people just don't care. They really don't. They just want stuff done. They want it done quickly. They want it done effectively, and they are buying you. They are buying the partner. If we're talking to IT, it's typically a different scenario, and I will market and talk much more heavily about Azure if we're selling an IT-based solution or a solution that is going to be purchased by an IT buyer. So the data center migrations, for example, does tend to very heavily revolve around some Azure expertise and Azure messaging. So I think it depends on which market you're talking to.
That's great. Thank you. And this is a bit of a follow-on question. So as you talked about talking to the business decision makers, does the size of the prospect determine the role of the primary buyer? Do you start with IT for larger companies and line of business for smaller? Do you see a difference there?
So yes and no. I do see a difference in that when we're dealing with a smaller client, they typically don't have IT. So we're typically engaged directly with the executives. And interestingly enough, that tends to be a big, we found that to be a very big market in the cloud, because it's, as the cost curves have bent, it's opened up opportunities for these smaller firms that they've never had before. In a larger organization, it frankly depends. We have entered large organizations through the line of business side. We have also had IT provide the initial point of entry. I think it depends a little bit on, again, the type of solutions and the part of the market that you're addressing. Obviously, if we're talking data center migration, the line of business folks are not, it's not on their radar. They're not going to engage. So that's clearly going to be an IT side sell. But when we're talking mobile and cloud, which we do pretty heavily, that is as oftentimes is not a line of business conversation initially. So, and I think these questions get back a little bit to some of Darren's comments on kind of the changing sales model, and we found that definitely to be true. We are definitely de-emphasizing a lot of the IT side pieces of our messaging and really emphasizing a lot of the kind of value add line of business capabilities.
And Alex, when you're getting all the questions today, what factors do you the next question is, what factors do you consider when you price out your recurring revenue? What goes into that?
Oh man, well this is a $1 million question, and I will be the first to admit I do not believe I have the magic answer here. This is definitely a work in progress. We've experimented with a lot of different things, and we continue to experiment. So we talked a little bit earlier about the block of time approach. That's okay, but oftentimes it gives you downside protection, but it's not exactly what your customers necessarily want. And we find it can introduce some friction. There are some times when we've tried an all-in approach so oftentimes when we're providing platform and support, I do not price out the platform, so the Azure piece, separately. I bundle it in. We've tried a number of different pricing models. I don't think we've necessarily solved this one. We continue to experiment there. From a selling perspective and a customer relationship perspective, customers oftentimes like that approach. But it's riskier. There's some downside to that approach. You can if your controls and scoping are not strong, you can find yourself underwater quickly. So you have to be a little bit careful there. My guess is that this is going to be an evolving art for a while. And I think different customers need different pricing structures. And so I've not found the one-size-fits-all solution to this yet.
Great. Thanks, Alex. So we're just about at the top of the hour, so I'm going to wrap up the Q&A here. We did have a number of questions about getting the slide deck and getting the IDC link. We will be following up with all of that information to everybody who attended today. I just wanted to say thank you to all of our speakers for doing a fabulous job, and thank you to all of our attendees for the engagement and the great questions. Thanks.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.